Development Alternatives for Women for a New Era, or DAWN, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic south working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is done by DAWN as a way of sharing its feminist critical analysis of the global environment through the voices of women from the south. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. DAWN Podcasts, the voices of women creating a just world.
I'm not very used to PowerPoints, but I put on here some notes to try to remind me what we are talking about. And, well, the more we speak about aid, And actually, I have to say that originally DAWN wanted me to talk a bit more about philanthropy and the new philanthropy and so on, and it certainly has an enormous role to play. Problem is, I don't know anything about private philanthropy. So I said, let's change the subject. I'm very interested to learn more about private philanthropy. But I have been starting at looking at official development aid, which of course has the advantage that being official is more subject to scrutiny and it's more subject to citizen participation, because after all, we are talking about public money and taxpayers' money, some taxpayers even. So, the challenge is made that for some future meeting, we definitely should be knowing and talking more about private philanthropy, which is non-accountable, completely non-accountable way of doing things. Still important, though. Anyhow, the more I look at aid and how it works or is supposed to work and so on, the more I remember a paradox that I used to joke with my daughters about, which is the Gruyere paradox. As you know, Gruyere is the Swiss cheese that has holes in it. And the logic of it is, of course, that the more cheese you have, the more holes you have. But the more holes you have, the less cheese. So at the end, the more cheese you have, the less cheese you have. It's very logical. And in a sense, that's what happens with aid, I think. So where's the cheese? With all, and yesterday we talked a little bit, it was mentioned, the campaigning, the year 2000, the MDGs, the new efforts to increase aid, the 2005 campaigning, and so on. At the end of 2008, which is the last available statistics, the aid percentage of the economy of the donors was exactly the same as in 1992. 0.31%, and less than half of what they promised almost 40 years ago, which was that it should be 0.7%. Now, the evolution of it, it has its ups and downs over the decades, but it's basically not moving in terms of the increased volume. You can have one year from the other even variations of up to 10% up or down and so on, but it pretty much oscillates around that. Now, where that aid goes, it's interesting. Let's remind us that we are talking here about $100 billion a year, roughly. And this $100 billion a year goes basically, 40% of that goes to just 20 countries. And almost 10% of that goes to one country at this moment, which is Iraq. And if you add three countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, and China, you already have 15% of the total ODA. China is still one of the major ODA recipients. And, so that's 2008, and then you have, the top five recipients get 22% and so on. That's more or less listed there at the bottom. All of those statistics are very easily available from the OECD. On the other hand, you have from the point of view of the countries, you know, that even though the volume can be enormous, as we were seeing the case of China receiving $2.6 billion in year in aid a year, that's probably the equivalent of 2 days accumulation of Chinese reserves. It's completely irrelevant for China. On the other hand, you have countries that receive more than half of their budget from official donors. And that's the case of Sao Tome and Principe, Burundi, Timor, you know. So you have here the list. In 2004, there are probably changes in the last year. Some countries may have gone up or down in that list. But it's basically a number of countries where aid amounts to a big percentage of the GDP, that's here in the graph, and a big percentage, even bigger percentage, of the government budget. Yeah. Now, we have the same quantity of aid as we have seen over the last 20 years at least, so what about the quality? And that was the promise made in 2005 in the Paris Declaration on Aid Effectiveness. Let us make a better use of the money. So if we don't have more money, but at least we will use it better. And that meant a process of increased coordination of the donors among themselves and with the World Bank, which has basically two new instruments that are derived of that. One of that is budget support. Instead of supporting projects or programs, there is a shift now. What is good and fashionable and the thing to do for all donors is to put your money into the budget directly. And that's the famous and very much repeated mantra about how many missions and project reports and so on the ministers in developing countries have to receive, and now the donors are making their life easier but by just sending them the money and putting it into the budget. And together with that comes a division of labor of donors, where donors specialized in different areas, some in education, others in health, or in different set of countries. And all of that is, again, coordinated and led not just by the OECD DAC, which is the traditional development assistance committee where the donors gather, but also and increasingly by the World Bank. Now, the Paris Declaration has five principles, which all of them sound very high and nice, which are ownership, alignment, harmonization, managing for results, and mutual accountability. Do I hear applause? And come on, that's supposed to really make us enthusiastic about it. But of course, there is a but. 0.7% money quantity is not mentioned at all in the Paris Declaration. And tied aid, which is identified explicitly even in the Paris Declaration as one of the problems that makes aid ineffective, there is no commitment related to that. Yes, we have a problem there, but as some of the people said, there is a coalition around aid, and if you disturb that coalition, you may lose the political support for aid. What do they mean that? The subsidized farmers that, for example, and their senators and representatives that lobby in favor of food aid in the U.S., which is, of course, a form for them to receive the subsidies, and that is independent on what havoc that creates in the recipient countries in terms of ruining their own peasants and so on. Yet, as some of the officers told us, be careful with what you wish. All money going to NGOs is also tied aid. That's how it is computed. So next time you demand we need to end Tide Aid, think twice. Or at least that's what they want us to do. Now, the Paris Declaration, and we were listening recently how important it is for documents to become protocols, to have concrete targets, to be a to-do list and a timeline and not just nice sounding words and promises, has 12 indicators and targets to be achieved by this year of 2010. Now, you would suppose that the indicators and targets are related to the principles of what they want to achieve. And they are related in the sense that they appear on the same line in the spreadsheet. But when you look at what the targets actually say of what they want to achieve, for example, ownership. What does ownership mean? You would say, well, ownership, we know what it means, you know. The countries decide what they want, and then the donors align to support what the country wants. Well, that's not what ownership means. According to the Paris Declaration, what ownership means is that the country has to have an operational strategy. What is an operational strategy? You mean PRSPs, poverty reduction strategy plans, that where so much effort was put into different countries? No. It's not necessarily a PRSP, because many PRSP, after civil society got involved and so on, they became less and less operational and very high sounding. So an operational strategy can be a PRSP, provided it has been approved by the World Bank, and it has been graded by the World Bank with an A. Now, at the moment when the Paris Declaration was written, there was no single country in the world that had an A in the World Bank grading, and only five had a B. So that means you want money to go into your budget, you have first to have an operational strategy that the World Bank agrees with. That's ownership, of course. In the same sense, you have to have reliable public financial management. Of course, we all want that, you know. And the target is that half of the countries have that. If you have a reliable public financial management, the donors may consider putting the money directly into your budget and using your procurement system. They are not forced to do that. They still may consider it. In order to do that, again, you have to be graded by the World Bank in according to what they call the country policy and institutional assessment. Now, there are other indicators and so on which probably for the benefit of time, we shouldn't go into so much detail. Let me just mention, for example, the last one, mutual accountability. Well, we all love mutual accountability, you know. Let's really discuss how we have done, all of us, our part of the deal. Now, mutual accountability, the target is that by the year 2010, it should have been put in place, and donors and recipient countries are to be mutually accountable. And if you haven't noticed, it is already happening, and most of the countries have already done their exercises of mutual accountability. How? By sitting on a table at the country level, the country officers, all the donors, plus the World Bank and the IMF, and then they make each other mutually accountable. Not joking, that's how it is. And it is being put in place. So, mutual accountability. Yeah. When you try to look farther into the small print and say, well, okay, still want that money, or I need it, half of my budget depends on that, how do I get an A in the grading, you know? It's very transparent you have to dig a little bit, but all those materials are quite available in the internet. So if you look, there is a manual for criteria on how the people grading are supposed to give the grades. And there is a methodology for you, for example, to assess your national procurement system, which is commonly developed by the OECD and the World Bank. If you look at that document, for example, you know, then you have the whole mechanism on how you have to comply and what the performance indicators are and so on, so you know very well how to get an A. In order to get an A, for example, you have to make sure that your procurement system is non-discriminatory. Oh, we love that. We love non-discrimination. No? Problem is that non-discrimination under those terms means that you cannot discriminate foreign firms. It means that if you want to buy uniforms for the army or for the kids going to school, you cannot prefer local women's cooperatives to do them. You have to have them bid in the same conditions with any transnational corporation. You cannot make unjust preferences to one or the other sector. And the assessor is to review exactly how that non-discrimination takes place. That includes even the army procurement, and not just of uniforms, also of arms or whatever you have, which is a norm that no OECD country itself would apply to submit to public scrutiny their buying of weapons and that kind of thing, which is explicitly excluded from all trade agreements, WTO, and so on. So the army defense, similar expenditures, and so on, have also to be submitted under those regulations. Some of you that have been following, for example, WTO negotiations will say, hey, isn't that the Singapore principle that all developing countries rejected about having to open up the procurement? Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the same principle. But, you know, you want to get an A, so that's what you have to do. So I said before, PRSP are not enough, and the new jargon is JES, Joint Assistance Strategy. That's the new conditionality package. By 2008, 13 African countries already had it. Probably now many more have. It makes for an interesting reading, even though sometimes it's a bit boring, because, for example, in the case of Tanzania, there are 49 pages of conditionality in the Joint Assistance Strategy document, listing in very clear detail everything that the government has to do. And that is before you receive any money, in order for you to enable you to receive the money. So that's the package. Advantage is that it is public, it is available on the internet. You do some search on the World Bank site and you will find it. Of course, you have to dig and go through a series of processes. Now, the problem is that still, you know, after many years of this being in place, the grading of the countries is not improving enough. So that keeps you, on the one hand, keeps you pressing. On the other hand, gives you very good excuses not to deliver. Of course, when we discussed this thing about grading the countries and so on, actual quote from a World Bank person was, no, come on, we don't grade countries like school children into A, B, C. No, we just group them into five categories. Oh, wonderful. Now, here is a testimony which is interesting. The former UN resident coordinator for Zambia, during a farewell dinner by the whole cabinet and the president and so on, you know, he was saying precisely, Paris Declaration is weakened on this aspect of the development encounter that could best promote actual national ownership over the content of development, after having being testimony of this process, where usually the UN is excluded and doesn't sit on the table of the donors and the World Bank in those processes because the UN does not do budget support. So, sorry, no, not coming there. Alignment, well, if you go around tests and conditions and so on, you will find the same thing, and here the doing business report is the reference and the grading. The doing business report is a yearly report by the World Bank, which they say it's outside the conditionality framework, it's just illustrative, it's just a research on how we make it easier for entrepreneurs to establish their business and so on. A couple of years ago, the doing business report explicitly recommended gender equality measures. Oh. Yeah, the gender equality measure they recommended was that in some countries where women can retire at an earlier age than men, that should be eliminated. Why? You know, be unequal and not have the right to work till 65 years, for example. Or if you have laws that say that women and children should not work at night, that should be eliminated also. You are depriving them of working opportunities. So that's that kind of thing. Mutual accountability, we talked about it a little bit. Now, this is creating a new global governance. This is creating a new multilateralism of donors and recipient countries. And this is creating a whole new sphere of discussions which is outside the traditional framework, not just of the United Nations, but also of the WTO or of the World Bank itself, where the ministers of the countries meet every 3 years according to a non-transparent process where there are no rules, no procedures, no voting, and where the OECD and the World Bank provide the secretariat. Yesterday, Jao was mentioned how in the Ghana ministerial of 2008, the Brazilian ambassador was told to shut down and not given the floor because he was raising, you know, whatever issues. The issues what he was raising was South-South cooperation at that moment. But that talks about this new global governance and style where the things are conducted. Anyhow, civil society managed one way or the other to enter into that process, managed to point to some of the weaknesses, for example, that the whole Paris Declaration doesn't talk about gender, doesn't talk about human rights, doesn't talk about the environment. It is only, you know, bureaucratic jargon about how we get more efficiency in the system and not about what it is for. So, of course, the Accra Declaration incorporates all those things, and we are all very happy now because you have this very nice language. We talk about democracy, economic growth, social progress, care for the environment, gender equality, respect for human rights, environmental sustainability. All of that is in the declaration. But there is no target, no commitment, no indicator related to none of that. And the Accra Action Agenda on its paragraph 27 renews the commitment to the principles and targets established in the Paris Declaration. Now this is very important language because they talk principles and targets. Everybody loves mutual accountability, national ownership, and so on. But by putting the word targets in it, they're saying, as understood by the way I have been describing there. Gender focus, for example, no. The Women's Forum, held before the Accra High Level Forum, urged for more resources for women. It urged for empowerment, balanced participation of women organizations, 10% of ODA that should be provided for gender equality and women's empowerment. Now, the language got into the declaration, the targets and so on did not. And there is no monitoring, no way of ensuring whether we have met the new language. South-South cooperation, coming back to that episode, which was really very interesting because many people feel that the whole purpose of the exercise and of having it in Accra and for announcing before going to Accra that the next ministerial would be where? In Beijing. Was to incorporate the new donors into the architecture. And that is what the Brazilian ambassador at that moment was very vehemently opposing, saying, no, no, South-South cooperation is something different, and why should we subject it to the norms and rules and procedures established by the OECD and the World Bank, which, after all, we have no say at all in establishing them. So that's the document by Brazil, very strong words about that. Then what you had in practice is that even though that kind of wording was included in the declaration, South-South cooperation is mentioned in the Accra Declaration, and it was not mentioned before in the Paris Declaration. So the process you have now is of the World Bank, together with the Colombian government, organizing a process to interpret and understand the mention to South-South cooperation made in the Paris Declaration. So when the Paris Declaration said that maybe South-South cooperation has things that North-South cooperation could learn about, because it's about solidarity among more or less equal countries and so on, fine, so now you already have a process in place where it's trying to learn from South-South cooperation and at the same time teach South-South cooperation how the North-South cooperation principles could be applied to them. That part was not in the declaration, but it was understood, well, it's the mutual accountability thing. No? You are going to learn from you, you can learn from us. And many governments are already involved into that process, as usually happens when the World Bank convenes ministers and so on for meetings, and they said, and there is money behind it. Now, it's not clear at all where that will lead. The coming process of the Paris Declaration high-level meeting is not going to be in Beijing because they forgot to ask the Chinese government. They announced it before going to Accra that it would be in Beijing, but then Chinese said, hey, nobody asked us. So it's going to be in South Korea next time. The process goes. Sorry if I abused my time.
For more information on the work of Don, do not hesitate to contact us. Our email address is info@donnet.org.